podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Churros y Tácticas podcast. This is your host, Kian Sobani. It is Monday something, August 30th, I don't know, something like that. And just a nice, normal intro without many R's from either of us.
Because getting used to that, your weak-ass intros.
It's kind of mediocrity right now because I'm not sure. Like, I definitely went over the top on the Friday show with my intro. And I really actually felt like you should do the intro today, but you wanted me to do it. And I think Friday is going to be the one where one of us really rolls it, because by then we'll know for sure whether this Mbappe cat is actually coming or not. Right yeah. Now, at this point, it's like a roller coaster, Diego, where it's like it's on and it's happening. Negotiations are underway. Real Madrid are optimistic. Then there were reports saying that, you know what, Real Madrid is going to walk away. And some reports conflicted
now,
but then, Pedrerol came out a few minutes ago and said,
"Oh,
that he confirmed that Real Madrid are walking away." That's what he said.
Okay.
And then now they're maybe saying tomorrow. We'll come. Let's go get some sleep. Let's come back with some fresh coffee tomorrow and see if we can be civil about this. I don't know.
That seems reasonable.
I don't know what's gonna happen. So, yeah. Just an unexpected Monday, I guess, because Friday it was 100%.
It was, and it was great. And you know what? All the while, all that time, I'm thinking, don't dare say, what if this doesn't happen? Because you're going to jinx it, and it'll be at the end of the show, the announcement will be made, and this whole podcast will be useless, which has been the occasion in the past where we've been made fun of, because immediately, like instantly as we post this podcast, it becomes irrelevant because the news breaks. So I kept that, what if it doesn't happen, phrase to myself. And look what's happening. Look what's where we are today, the 30th of August, with just, what is it? On 2 days left, I think, of the transfer market. I think it closes Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, was it Wednesday or Tuesday midnight? I can't remember.
Or Tuesday midnight, right, exactly. But here we are. But listen, we'll get into that, because obviously the transfer market reaching its end means frenetic sales, transfers all over the place. And in the case of some clubs, much needed ones. But what an entertaining weekend we had as well, of course, in La Liga. We're now upon the first international break, 2 week break. And I have a question for you, which maybe you'll be able to help me out with, but I'm not sure. Having said that, three games played. I don't know, all the big guys that you'd expect have 7 points out of nine. Nobody able to take the full nine out of 9 points so far. But this last match day, I was able to reconnect with football, having come back from the old holidays, the last holidays of the summer. And I'm curious to know your thoughts on Madrid. I think we have a very juicy Atleti Villarreal that we need to get through as well, which maybe was the game of the weekend, with permission of who was it? Osasuna against fucking blanking. Cadiz, gracias. Mm-hmm. That awesome comeback, and Barca getting as well their depressing 3 points. So yeah, man, where do you want to start?
Should we? I guess I like the fact that we're starting with football when we could easily not start with football, because my favorite thing is to actually talk about the football itself. And
yeah,
with everything else, we can maybe talk about towards the end. But
well, I felt like last time, we didn't have any time to talk about the Champions League group breakdown and all that. We just spoke about the transfer, this potential transfer that might not happen now. So I thought, why don't we kick off with some footy? Because there were good games.
I thought the Atletico Villarreal game was fascinating and an apt to start there for a variety of reasons. One, because I actually really like Atletico's performance. And Atletico, this is kind of reminiscent of what Atletico have been doing for a few years now, where at the beginning of the season, they play very attack-minded football.
That's true. And then they disappoint.
The first half, they were really fun to watch. And, we've been thankful for Atletico being a little bit more fun to watch every year, just to make it more fun to everyone, those watching, their fans, the opposing fans. It's just a little bit better for everyone when they're playing attacking football. And that first half was especially, I really like what I saw from them.
Now, like, what did you like?
I just like that, they're they have a lot of numbers in the final third. They're not afraid to push numbers up as they used to be. Their pressing is a little bit better. They like anytime you look at them and they're kind of the lines they're trying to break, everyone from Suarez and Correa to the wing backs, which are basically like forwards, like really attacking wingers like Trippier and Lamar. Lamar was awesome.
Lamar.
They just have a lot of good movement, and Marcos Llorente is like the king of that too. Now, I guess it's interesting also because when you look at their goals conceded, well, two of them, one of, but so there was the Trigueros one, which was an incredible goal. But also it's weird because I feel like Savic and Hermoso had poor games, and they, as much as they, you know, they drew this, they got lucky with the draw. They also kind of shot themselves in the foot, and they let Villarreal score from two moments where they didn't really do that much outside of those moments. And it came down to like Savic missing a tackle and Hermoso having a pretty poor game. This is a weird stat. Jan Oblak didn't have a single save in this game. One, because he just didn't have anything to deal with in the first half because Villarreal just didn't test him. And then two, because obviously the one that went through Trigueros, he just couldn't stop it. Like it just kind of went through his hand there.
Yeah. Well, that was unstoppable. You could argue, I guess, that what was his name? The Danjuma scored the second goal that maybe he could have done better on that one. But
yeah. I mean, so Atletico, I mean, the way it ended was crazy. Where do you place the blame? Do you place that on Rulli or Mandy, both? Like,
I don't know that, or if it's more having to do with just, you know, suerte. They talk about suerte del campeón very often here, right? Luck of the champion. It's one of those classic miscommunications that we've seen. It's not the first time that we see this, right? So you blame it on bad miscommunication, perhaps a misreading as well of, you know, Asenjo in, you know, what you could wonder why, where is he going? Why is he not standing in between the sticks, right?
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, because I think the back pass is a valid one and it's not a violent header of any of the sorts, right? But yeah, Asenjo is very very far away from his mark. So I get being pushed on this one, obviously, and now going over it, analyzing it, Asenjo.
Yeah, I just want to add, like, I didn't. Like,
oh, Rulli, excuse me. I keep saying it. Asenjo is actually Rulli.
I watch Rulli's movement off, like, in the build-up to that play over and over and over again. And my conclusion is, as much as Mandy needs to know, be aware of his surroundings, that I don't understand why Rulli came out of his net and went to that left side. I don't
exactly.
Like, I really just don't understand what he was doing there, because there were two.
Because you see, Mandy doesn't. Sorry, go on.
Well, there were two Villarreal players on that side and it was covered. He didn't need to come out of his net. Like, for what reason? Why would he even do that? So I pin it mostly on Rulli, but I think it just seemed to me like the way, like, I don't know, the reaction, and I don't know if this is accurate or not. I just felt like maybe Mandy's the one who takes the fall. He's the villain in all this, but it's...
I mean, he's got Correa chasing him down. You know, so he's either forced to either header that very far into, let's say, the midfield, where also, because I'm looking at a freeze image now, where the ball is actually right behind Carrasco. So for him to make that back pass is not absurd. There's nothing strange. But yeah, Rui running over to the left-hand side and then just being off his mark is no es bueno, mira.
You asked the question though at the beginning of the podcast, of the top three, who do you think looks the most impressive so far?
You've got to say, I'll probably go with Atleti.
Okay. Why did you say, was it the word depressed you used in the intro about Barca's performance? Is that what you said? Are depressing?
Yes, a depressing 3 points.
What? Can you elaborate?
it's just the sense that you get, man. It's like, I feel that right now. I mean, I expressed it on the last podcast too, that the mood is pretty somber, pretty depressing. You know, the post-Messi era has begun and it's upon us. And I think it's really dawning to us the mammoth task we have ahead, and perhaps not necessarily, I gotta be careful here. Let's just say that I'm not this is not personal opinion, but the general sense of Kulis is they have little confidence in that Ronald Koeman will be the coach that will allow this Barca to stick to its roots and therefore allow ways to younger players to really kind of get used to playing at this in the Spanish top flight and lead this team to at least to reconnect with its roots. And you know, when Memphis got the two, and you know, there's certain bright spot. Memphis obviously is one. De Jong continues to be a bright spot, and the debuts, official debuts in the Camp Nou at least, of Gavi and Nico González Nico, I think he actually debuted already, was just Gavi, are marvelous, you know, is great news. However, they entered because of the injuries. And the Griezmann Mingueza substitution was not necessarily met with great applause or joy, seeing as it was a clear intent for Koeman to protect the result when, you know, the classic sort of Cruyff / Barca way, and I specify the slash because not everybody necessarily is in that camp, but you know, continuing to play daring and offensive football forms is part of the package of many of Barca fans, their philosophy and their views on how this team should play. And the tactics don't Koeman's tactics don't necessarily always invite you to be that optimistic when it comes to, you know, seeing the likes of the youth getting important minutes in this team. Another sour note in that sense was Sergio Roberto, despite him scoring his second goal in three games in La Liga, playing in the midfield. Many see him as a valid option potentially on the flanks, and you know, the fact that Emerson looks like he's packing his bag to go over to Tottenham has some people thinking that might be a good option for Koeman to, you know, because there's all this talk of Bellerin coming in instead, and from what I'm gathering, a lot of people are saying that they wouldn't mind Sergio Roberto playing in that fullback position, but at least in the midfield, right? Yeah, and it makes perfect sense. But at least in a midfield, allow, you know, the younger talents, the Gavis, the Nikos, the Ricky Puig again, of course, allow them to have minutes instead of having the older guard occupy a territory of minutes in that area.
Yeah, and that is really interesting too. Like, what your right side in general, because right now, I mean, there are a couple positives for me with Barca. In addition with the youngsters, which you're very high on, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned just a few of them too. But just like even looking at the people who start right now, there are two players that are really exciting for me if I'm a Barca fan. One of them is Memphis, who, you know, we've talked about him already. It's like three games in and he's been like talk of the town, rightfully so. Yeah. Like he's been your best player, I think.
Yeah.
And
with the young, I would say.
With De Jong, and that's the other person I was going to say. So De Jong in midfield, just his ability to progress the ball. And I feel like he's gotten even smarter, like since last season. I feel like he's just kind of like, it's starting to click. He's going to get better and better. And he's already like your most important midfielder at this point.
Yeah.
And between him and Memphis on that left side, everything looks pretty good. Yeah. And then you look over on the right side, I'm just not like, obviously you don't have Messi. And Griezmann is playing so deep at this point. And I just wonder like how much of that dynamic changes if once Ansu comes back and Dembélé comes back, where you can actually put wingers who are going to take players on at a high clip on that right side to balance it out for Memphis and give him some help in the attack. I wonder how much this will change. And also,
you're going to see.
Yeah.
Mm. No, I was going to say, you're going to see, I think, Ansu and Memphis switch on the left and for the number nine role. You see what I mean? Whereas the right, I mean, from what we gather from the press conference and listening to Koeman talk, I mean, Antoine Griezmann has got that right position on lock, that you know, the right wing on lock, and it's hard to see, you know, Dembele potentially maybe move in there. I don't know. Collado certainly won't. So yeah, I think right now it's very clear that the Barca front three will be Ansu, Memphis, and Antoine.
That I think would be. I mean, look, and I don't want to. Just gonna be careful saying this because I think I don't know. Actually, Braithwaite have fans? Does he have like
absolutely
a cult following? Okay,
Danish. No, you will not find anybody who will say a bad word about Braithwaite.
No, I know that. But does he like have the cult following on Twitter that will come after you if you tell say he should be?
Oh, I don't know. But his nickname around town here in Barcelona is Braithwaite Nathario. That's what
I love it. Okay, so that being said, Braithwaite has had a really good start to the season, but what you just mentioned, Ansu, Griezmann, Memphis, is a lot scarier to face. And I'll be interested to see how Koeman juggles that. But I also did want to ask you about, because you brought up Sergio Roberto and he's got injured, right?
Yes.
I don't, what was it? The extent of injury, was it serious or no?
Don't know yet. It hasn't actually come out yet.
Okay. So Ricky Puch, do we know something like in, do you know something internally that you can say is like why Ricky Puch? Koeman talked about him again. He said, yeah. And you know Koeman, he's very candid. So he said, the quote is, Ricky Puch, the club, as well as everyone else, knows my opinion about players who will not get a place in the starting lineup. What did he do wrong? I'm still trying to figure that out. I don't.
Yeah. No. Other than, you know, what we reported here on the pod last season, which were all speculations, which is all here, you know, he say, hearsay, she say. I always screw that saying up, but I don't know why I even bother. The hearsay, she say, I don't know. You know,
I'm like the last person you like
the hearsay,
to know, like any right. Analogy, any saying.
One of our loyal listeners.
Wrong with that stuff. I just make that, it up.
One of our loyal listeners on Twitter will be like, "It. What you're trying to say is this," and I always appreciate you guys correcting me.
He say, but she say, I think it is.
Is it he say, she say? Well,
yeah. That's also the name of like, a song.
Here's
so I don't
say.
Know
if that. All right. But is that one, he leaked some information out of the dressing room with regards to, I think it was the starting lineup, but this, you're talking like early, you know, last season, I even when I think it was preseason that this happened. Then there's the potential rumors that the dressing room heavyweights don't like him, but then you see him doing Twitch videos at Piqué's house. So you're like, you're wondering who are these dressing room, you know, vacas sagradas, as they're referred to here, the old guard, because Piqué seems to be totally cool. Busquets seems to be cool. Then you hear that, he's snobbish, he's snobby, his attitude. But the guy, whenever we see him come out on the field, works harder than anybody else, always brings that chispa, that extra spark that the team is missing at the moment. So really nobody gets it. And it's a question mark, man. It's unfortunate too, because we're all like, I don't know any Puch haters that are like content with this decision, with Koeman's decision to leave him on the bench. And in fact, so much so that there were reports that came out that Laporta, one of the conditions that Laporta put for his the continuity of Koeman was that he would allow players like Puch more, you know, to give continuity to them and allow them to have more significant minutes, you know. But you know, even Gavi and Nico are ahead of the pecking order at this point.
Well, it's
which I'm not saying is unjust. It's just you know, what is his problem with Puch, as you the question you posed.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting too, but like, I mean, Pedri's on vacation, right? And you thought that this, I'm not saying Ricky Puch would have started, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, well, at least, like Nico came off the bench in this one.
Yeah, Nico and Gabby both did.
Came off the bench. Yeah. So, I mean, it's an interesting one. And also, like, this ties into the Emerson discussion, because Emerson, from what I understand, did not want to leave, and Barca didn't want to sell him, but the money is good and they need money. Could they have us? Why not, like, look at Ricky Puig? If you're not going to play him, maybe, like, it's kind of like that, maybe coach versus player battle, and that Puig maybe is hoping to outlast Koeman. And once Koeman goes, then Puig maybe will get playing time again. I don't know. But I do feel like players like him that are young at that age, they do need to play. Like, you know, there's some point where you just have to look at your career before it flashes by and be like, okay, maybe I should go somewhere and play. And even if it's just going out on loan or something, like, I know you guys don't really send players on loan the way Real Madrid does, but I feel like that would be an option as well. So I don't really see the point of keeping him. And especially if he's behind the pecking order when Pedri goes on vacation behind Nico and Gavi, then what is he really doing in the squad?
What is he doing? He's just wasting his time. That's how the kid has to feel at this point too, because it's got to be frustrating. And, you know, truth be told, you don't really see, neither after these kind of statements that Koeman came out with, a solution in the short term for at least Ricky Puig within the Barca first team, you know, other than sitting on the bench, which I doubt he's willing to do, even though he's done that for what seems like an eternity at this point.
I've been thinking also about your question since you posed at the beginning of the podcast, who are the big three are looking the best. I don't disagree with your take on Atletico. I just want to say that
Valencia look pretty fucking good.
Yeah, well, we just kind of know that they're going to go away at some point. They're never real.
I don't know. They are cooking something up, I feel like. Yes, but they have some big news dropping soon too. I might be a little bit old on this one, but Bordalás seemed to have been on the verge of announcing. No, excuse Bordalás. No, what's his name? That famous Italian. I think he's Italian journalist Fabrizio. I mean, we're talking millions.
I was so confused when you said Bordalás. I was like, what did I miss? What happened to Bordalás?
No, Bordalás, obviously not. But he announced something. This journalist, famous journalist with millions of followers, whose name I'm blanking on, announced something on Valencia's Twitter, official Twitter page, saying that there was some big announcement going to occur within the next few days.
Okay.
You didn't see this one?
No,
this
I video? Haven't.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Okay. No. What could it possibly be that would, like, Valencia, a big signing for Valencia would be what?
Mbappe. No. Can you imagine?
Yeah, so I was going to say,
I don't know. Some reject from the Premier League, I don't know.
My kind of feeling from these first three games is that I'm not sure if any of these three teams look that great to me right now.
Okay.
So that's it. I feel like Real Madrid have progressed offensively. But they still have a lot of things to work on. And you know, like, at the beginning of the season, you're always like, there's a certain maybe hype, and it just kind of, like, eventually just fizzles out. I feel like, you know, the first game was pretty hype. Second game, we scored 3 goals. And the third game was kind of like, it was still more fun than what we saw last season. But, you know, it's kind of, you eventually lose that kind of momentum. And I think things will kind of normalize and stuff. So I'm not blown away by any of these three teams yet. Is my take. By the way, I want to ask you, were you offended that Sandro Ramirez celebrated against you guys? Or do you not care? About? Was that a talking point? I don't know I haven't looked at any discourse. Well,
on Twitter, I have no clue. Amongst myself and friends, no. It was just in the moment, in the heat of the moment. You're like, fuck you, you know. But, you know, the guy's got to do what a guy. I mean, the guy's scored a great goal. It was a beautiful play between him and Alignan. He finished it off nicely. What's he going to do? I wanted to give a little dedicatorio, like a little dedication to his pregnant wife or his babies. I don't know. But no beef.
Okay. And I guess enough time has passed too, and he's really not a relevant player at this stage of his career.
No, if only he could have done that while he was at Malaga. What was it?
The last three, match day.
Three seasons ago, his last match day against Real Madrid. Then he would have been surely beloved and hailed.
There definitely was a period like a couple years ago, maybe more, maybe it was 3 years ago, where there was definitely some hype around him that I never really bought because I was never that impressed with him. And that quickly fizzled out.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about now?
I mean, look, I don't want to, well, even though predominantly we talk about the big two, I don't know if you want to talk about Elias.
Definitely.
Looks like that is, you know, on the verge of being confirmed by clubs, or the clubs at least reaching an agreement, along with what I just mentioned before, Emerson potentially leaving for Tottenham in the case of Elias. Looks like Leipzig and Barca have reached an agreement of 16 million plus three in variables for a player who was determined to not accept the offer that was proposed. This is something I haven't mentioned on the podcast, but mainly because I didn't know, but the word around the campfire was that the offer that Barca were presenting to him was that of 4 million. So again, whether that was true or not, I don't know, but apparently 4 million for an 18-year-old Elias and company was not enough. And what are you going to do? What are you going to do in a case like that? You know, I think it's good for a club to set the standard, not just, you know, with when it comes to principles and how they conduct their business with clubs and players in this case, but also to stick to their salary class or categories, let's say, right? And I mean, imagine if Elias would have ended up with a 6 million euro contract at the age of 18. I mean, you know, how does that come across to other players, more veteran players, and what standard do you set? I mean, we've seen what happens when you set that kind of a standard, and Bartomeu and company were responsible for handing out ridiculous contracts. It's a new day. It's a new dawn in Can Barça, where we're not going to hand out ridiculous contracts just because. And if you're not okay with that, then it's in your good right to leave, or in Barca's case, to leave him on the bench. And I think, you know, for both club and player, this is the best possible scenario, seeing as, like I said, the player was determined to leave, to go to Leipzig. He was unwilling, again, these are reports, to negotiate with Tottenham. Why? They say because Leipzig has an agreement in place with his agents and father. They were going to get a little bit more juicy, a little bit bigger slice of the pie, I guess. So that's it. Going over to a team over in Germany that, from what I've gathered, are not having the best start of the season. Justin lost an important man, of course, for them in the midfield to Bayern Munich as well. So it's a position that he is coming to fill. So you could expect him to get plenty full minutes over in Leipzig. But where, you know, it's it's a head scratcher, man. You know, it's why Leipzig, right? Why not a top club? Whether it's in Germany or in the Premier League, because he certainly has the potential to play at that level. And why the renunciation as well of playing for the Spanish national side and playing for guy? Look, again, he's in his good right, and we haven't heard anything from Elias, so. I don't want to put any words in his mouth or speak for the guy, but they are head scratchers, and they leave you a little bit stunned, baffled, because you wonder, look, is this really the best path for your career? And every day you open a newspaper, some more information comes to light. And again, these are, of course, this is information that comes out in the newspaper, so it's not like I know at hand that this is a fact, but a lot of weird things are being publicized or put out there when it comes to the entourage the people that are managing Elias Moriba's career, which is really quite saddening for a player that has so much talent and potential to you know, basically step away from an opportunity to play for such, you know, on the biggest stage for club and country. after having been given the confidence by head coach, your head coach as well, is mind boggling. And I would love to know from him personally what he thinks and his reasoning.
Well, I think the reasoning is baffling for sure. And if I had to guess, just based on what we've read and what we've known so far and what you've been saying.
I say Ghana, I meant Guinea. Sorry, it's interjecting. Sorry.
I just don't think, like, he's good. He's not going to come out and say, like, there probably isn't a great reason apart from what we've seen, which is basically he wants more money than he deserves. That's the honest truth. And like, when we're talking about like, you know, should he have gone to a bigger team? And I've seen a lot of people say like, well, Elijah Moriba is at this price, it's very cheap and stuff. I think it's worth reminding everybody that he's played less than 15 games for Barcelona. He's
right.
As a professional footballer, purely speaking, he's played 14 games. That's it. That's all we know of him. That's it. And even with Barca B, he's played less than 20 games since 2019. And it's not like he has this long track record. It's not even like, you know, we've seen players get sold for like 6 months of football. I'm talking about like Luka Jovic, João Felix, who like played 6 months of good football in the Europa League. Elex doesn't even have that. So yes, in those 14 games, he looked good. I'm not denying that. But I'm like, I just can't believe the entitlement of after 14 games wanting a raise in this climate.
Yeah. And
especially like we're talking about like who would have won, like Sergio Roberto started in midfield yesterday, Pedri's on vacation. This is, I think he's crazy. So whatever happens at Leipzig, it happens, I guess. Good luck, but just a really crazy situation if you ask me.
100%. And you know, it does come at a time, of course, where Barca are in desperate need for money. So, you know, alleviating the salary cap is at the top of the priority. So 16 plus million is nothing to dismiss at this point for Barca, and let alone much less, of course, for a player that you mentioned has played so little. It might be the most successful transfer of a Barça B player in that sense, right? If we can consider him a Barça B player, which of course he isn't. But then there's the news of Emerson, which you know, this is all speculation for the moment. But it looks like he has also given his okay to negotiate his transfer to Tottenham Spurs, to Hotspurs, and that would bring in another mid 20, some outlets say 30 million, of which I believe 10% or 20% will go to Betis. But another, I would say good business for Barca, seeing as I think the fullback position in his spot is decently covered. You still have other players that you can put in that position. We talked about Sergio Roberto. Let's not go over that again. But him going back to a more defensive position and leaving the midfield for the youngers, and rotating between Dest, Sergio Roberto, Mingueza. Obviously, you've got Balde coming up, who's a very exciting young prospect who just renewed his contract and has already made some appearances under Koeman. So I would say okay for Emerson leaving for that kind of money, but then don't bring in a Bellerin, please. An injury prone Hector Bellerin, por mucho que, like, for the despite the fact that he is, of course, an old Masia player, you know, let's not do that. Let's not go there, because nothing personally against Bellerin, but mainly what I know from him is how often he's been injured over these past few seasons and how little he's played. And we don't need that right now.
Yeah, I think that would be a silly move, and you're just better off allocating those minutes to Dest and Sergio Roberto. That's for sure. And I'm pretty certain about that. And even what I've seen from Bellerin, and anytime he has been on the field, I've actually been able to watch him. And there's nothing terribly impressive about him. He's not a good defender. And offensively, he just, like, you can't rely on a lot of his offense was just reliant on overloads and running past people, which I don't really know what version of him exists right now physically. So I'd stay away from that one for sure. Diego, I wanted to talk about Mbappe, but not too much, because
yeah,
I feel like it almost doesn't matter what we talk about, because it could be outdated. And
yeah,
it's almost like I'm at a stage now where, like, just being really honest with you, Thursday night, I was at like, this deal is 98% done. Friday, I was still like at 95%. Saturday, Sunday, this weekend, it was at like 30%. This afternoon, it was back up to 60%. Now it's back down. And now all we know is that it's going to happen. If it's going to happen, it has to happen tomorrow. And until the very last second, maybe there's a chance. But, you know, until midnight tomorrow, we might not have our answer until like the very last second, because I believe Real Madrid will keep trying and the PSG will keep probably saying no and maybe changing their mind.
L'Equipe right now are saying Madrid offers 200, but neither for 200 million is PSG willing to accept the offer.
So I wanted to indulge you on some PSG slander, because I know you'll be up for it.
Yes, get it, get it.
So they promised that they would not hold a player against his will, which is exactly what they're doing. They got mad at Real Madrid for their quote unquote behavior, where this is exactly how they tap up other players. They also said this thing that like Mbappe has promised not to leave for free, which we know means shit all, because a verbal agreement means nothing. It's all about what's on paper and written down. Then they said, okay, we will part ways with him if you meet our asking price. Real Madrid hit the 200 and it's still no. And I think they're just basically at a stage now where, first of all, I don't even think they're going to listen. The only reason they're listening, obviously, is like, because Mbappe is pushing like, hey, accept the offer from what we're gathering from reputable sources anyway. And I think basically at this stage, I would guess that they are assuming that from now until January 1st, like if the deal doesn't happen tomorrow, they're going to rely on from Wednesday, 12:01 a.m., until January 1st, 2022, they're going to be like, we have these days to convince him to stay. And we're going to do that by, he's just going to love all the assists.
Would you love to be Mbappe for that time?
He's just basically, that's what they're banking on. And I'm sure Real Madrid, right when January 1st hits, they're going to be trying to sign him ASAP and, you know, get him tapped up in January 1st. I feel like if it doesn't happen tomorrow, then it's just going to be like, there's no guarantee. I'm not saying like I'm confident Mbappe won't re-sign with PSG, but I'm definitely saying that we can't assume it fully. And there's definitely room for things to change. And I have a little bit of anxiety about it. I actually think that there's definitely a chance that we won't sign it for free. And I'm definitely ready to sign in for free as well. And I think it's going to be pretty ugly between Real Madrid and PSG at that point, but that it'll only be PSG's fault and not Real Madrid's if that happens. So Friday, man, Friday is the big one. Friday is the big churros.
It's very interesting. And it's, very strange as well, how this is all playing out, where this club like PSG has over these past, what has it been, 5 years, ever since the Neymar, you know, transfer, really become this club that ever since the, you know, their battles with Barca, and I say battles, but the only one that we really won was the 6-1, because all the other battles on and off the pitch, I feel they've had the upper hand, and clearly in the transfer window, they've had the better of Barca. And to see them managing to, you know, go the distance with Florentino Perez is interesting, because I don't think that maybe he is even used to being in this situation. Although, you know, with Levy, we have seen it with Inter as well. Juventus, of course, when he snapped up Ronaldo and Zizou, they were not necessarily 1-2-3 deals. Even Cristiano Ronaldo, for that matter, Alex Ferguson was adamant that he would never deal with those quote-unquote, as he referred to, bunch of mafiosos, and he was trying his best to put get Barca involved in a transfer and to get him over to Barca instead. all failed attempts, of course, and Florentino always got what he wanted, and it all started with Figo. But it would be nice, it would be an interesting change of story, I guess, if Florentino wouldn't end up victorious in this one. And I'm not even entirely sure if I'm like who I'm rooting for in this battle, you know. Disdain and dismay for PSG is very well known. However, you know, the idea and the prospect of Mbappe going over to Real Madrid, as exciting as it would be, and it would be for Spanish football, for, you know, the weekly entertainment that we would get over here, you know, it would be painful for Culé to see that deal go through, because, you know, knowing that what really allowed this to, of course, play out and happen is effectively our hero, our superstar going over to the PSG camp. Otherwise, you know, I don't think this even would have been a conversation had Messi not gone to PSG. This right now, what we're seeing, would not be happening.
What do you mean?
Like, PSG wouldn't be even in talks, negotiations with Real Madrid. They would just be, look, you're staying here and we're letting you go off, you know, for free if we have to next season. But they wouldn't entertain this thought of I think, cashing in on him now. They would not, you know, they would be the losers of the summer. And I don't think that the sheikhs are used to being losers, let's say, on the losing end. Their summer would be a failure after, you know, getting in everybody besides Messi. So Wijnaldum,
Ashraf,
Ramos, correct.
Donnarumma.
They got a bunch. And if, you know, that would not, like, soften the blow of somebody like Mbappe leaving. I just don't think, you know, the fact that they got Messi, they're kind of like, okay, fine. Yeah. And like I said, Mbappe has never been really so warm and welcoming, I think, at least from our perspective, from what we saw on Instagram when Messi came. So I think, you know.
Well, I actually think, like, getting Messi almost, it's like even more of an obligation that you can't just get Messi and then not have these three play together, because that's everyone was going crazy over, right? It's like Messi, right. Mbappe, Neymar. And I have another point to make. I don't know if anyone's talked about this, because I didn't actually watch the game myself, so I don't, shows you how much I actually care. But Messi's debut for PSG, he comes on for Neymar, which was a wasted opportunity, because that may have been the only time we could have seen Messi, shit. Mbappe, Neymar
so
together.
True. That's so true.
But again, I didn't even watch it, so it shows you how much I actually care. Did you watch?
I watched those last. I did, man. I lost. I watched the last 15 minutes. Hey, he had a couple of, you know, arrancadas, like little kick starts of his where he goes off. But you can also see that the French league, I think, by the looks of it, is definitely a lot more physical than La Liga, and Messi will have need some time to adapt, I think, to a much more physical and permissive play. Players, you know, tucking on that shirt, going into tackles a little harder. It won't make it easy on Messi. These are players with less quality, surely, than we have here in La Liga. But it wasn't a glamorous debut, you know, far from it. Obviously, Mbappe stole the show. But it was very weird to see. It was still very weird to see.
All right. So do we have anything else that we need to address today?
Well, I'll just leave this out there. Another Demir. Emre Demir. Barca have, again, with the permission of still the official communication to come out, have now officially signed an 18-year-old Turkish player, or is actually, sorry, still 17 years of age. But he's been an exciting prospect that's been on the radar actually for quite a while. I would almost say like a good year. Already last year, his name started to sort of come to light, and not seen very much of him other than, of course, the highlights, and you're looking at potentially a very exciting player, still very young. But just remember the name Emre Demir, not to be confused with Yusuf Demir, both of course 17 years of age, one Austrian, one Turkish.
Okay, we'll take your word for it, and we'll look forward to it, I guess. This coming weekend in La Liga, not to get too ahead of ourselves, this is a weird one, because Barca's game, as well as, I believe, Atletico's... No, Atletico, not Atletico. Oh, there was another team. Which game was it? Barca's game is postponed though, because
remember I said I have a question for you.
No,
was that your at question? The beginning of the top of the show? I said I have a question I want to pose to you later.
Okay, it was about that.
It was about this. Why? I don't understand the postponement or potential, postponement of this match. For what reason?
So this is kind of not entirely confusing, but confusing enough to be confusing.
Probably has to do with TV hours, TV rights, broadcasting rights, right? Games are played.
The issue is that there's World Cup qualifiers in South America. And right now there's a bunch of countries in South America that are red flagged because the pandemic is has come back strong in those countries. And because of that, like the players who are coming back from South America will be coming back later. Like a lot of them will be getting in on Friday when there's games this weekend. And they may also have to quarantine longer because of those countries that they're coming back from, you know, depending on, you know, what their status will be or whatever. If they'll be, you know, just based on their test, if their test comes back positive or negative and stuff for COVID. So then basically La Liga and a bunch of teams in Europe actually made appeals to the CAS, which is the Court of Arbitration for Sport, and said, look, like we need to postpone our games, or we need to like not send our players basically. And the CAS rejected La Liga's appeal for that. So that's the situation they're in. And because of that, so now we're seeing the games being postponed. Now, the thing I'm not entirely sure about right now as the time of this recording is why only Barcelona's game was brought forward and not Real Madrid's, because Real Madrid will be also sending Casemiro, Militao, Vinicius, Rodrigo. I don't know if all four of those players were called up, but at least three of them are. So that one, I'm not entirely sure of what's happening as of right now, but the Barca game, and I think maybe Villarreal was the other one that got postponed. I have to look at it again, but it's kind of confusing. That's why I said it's kind of confusing, but kind of not. I'm confused as to why it was rejected given the situation. And I'm also confused as to why only two of the games were postponed and not all of them, or not more of them at least, certainly including Real Madrid's.
Okay.
I know Real Madrid was scheduled initially for Saturday, but now it's scheduled for Sunday.
Pues vamos a ver. That means that next game, Barca's next game back in the Camp Nou is against Bayern. So we got something to look forward to.
So you guys don't have a game until the 14th of September then.
Right, exactly.
All right. Well, that means we can finally talk about other things, unless there's some corruption that day in Barcelona. We'll see. Can't say either way. We can't guarantee it. I know you're smiling and nodding, but you can't use your words. But
the name of the journalist, Fabrizio Romano. Surely you know him.
Yeah, it's a really hard one to forget his name. Yeah. But
But do you know who he is?
Certainly not Bordalas.
Not Bordalas.
You call Fabrizio Romano Bordalas. That's an incredible mistake.
The man's got nearly 5 million followers, and I blanked on his name. Yeah. And I called him Bordalas instead, yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Cool. Let's wrap it up.
Yes.
And we'll be back Friday exclusively on patreon.com/churrosytacticas. And we will see you guys there.
We crossed the 300 milestone, right?
Yeah, we crossed 300 patrons. So thank you very much to everybody who subscribed on Patreon. And here's to many more. Next one is 500. That's the next milestone. So thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Talk soon, Diego. Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Sports Social Podcast Network.